A man in a wheelchair gathered together a group of misfit younger heroes. The world feared and hated these superpowered beings, but the man in the wheelchair was able to teach them to work as a team, save the same world that wanted nothing to do with them. And that is the story of the X-Men. It is also the story of Doom Patrol.
That's good. Good job. Hey, applauders. Welcome to this month's podcast. I'm Naomi McQuaid.
I'm Lydia Malcolm.
And I'm Jen McQuaid. And you know what thing we're doing? Because you clicked on the thing.
Perfect. Keep it in. Lydia?
Doom Patrol.
Yes, yes.
So this was my choice. So should this ever turn into a dumpster fire, then everybody can blame me.
I think it's a wonderful foray into my most beloved activity, which is binge watching TV.
Also, I think it would line up with Doom Patrol if it does turn into a trash fire, because they're all, I think they would also classify themselves, the characters, by the way, not the actors. The actors are wonderful and amazing and everything. But the characters, I think, would classify themselves as dumpster fires.
I mean, if any ragtag group of superheroes who are fundamentally flawed and always breaking the fourth wall, that would be us and them. So.
Oh, and this is the most prepared I've been for one of the podcasts, because I absolutely love the show so much. And these are like not even my favorite episodes, but I still love them so much.
Same.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've got movies we're never doing on the podcast because I can't.
Yeah. I don't want to nitpick. Nope. I don't want to tear it down. I don't want to find anything flawed with it.
I don't want to look in the kitchen of my favorite restaurant. How about that?
I don't want to know how the sausage is made. It's delicious and I haven't thrown up yet.
Andrew Zimmern, if it looks delicious, eat it. Unless it gives you violent diarrhea, I think is the end of that sentence, but he never says it.
That's just the natural conclusion to that.
Yeah.
We did have a comment on our website in the last week, so I wanted to read our newest review. If I could.
Have you heard this?
No, I haven't. This is going to be great.
Drum roll, please.
Bada, 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 bada.
5 stars.
Woo!
From Cool Movies with a Z. I tried to track down this user on Twitter, but it may be somebody else, and I didn't want to like try tweeting at that person and being wrong. But rather witty roundtable trio who focuses on defending or putting some pop culture entity on trial while finding amusing facts about the many batches of material they're tackling. That's a pretty nice summary there, I think.
Yeah, what was her name again?
Cool Movies with a Z.
Thanks, Cool Movies.
Zzzz.
Appreciate that. We appreciate every review. That's like amazing.
Okay, so I was the one, again, I was the one who chose this.
You keep saying it like you're like the one, you're like, I was the one who put it in the cup and raised it to your lips. But honey, we already went there. I've seen every episode of this.
Yeah, but this is, okay, we are not doing the normal like breakdown of like, oh, this is the entire season. We're just talking about the things that we like in the first season. And now that I say that out loud, that might have actually just been a fun thing to do. But because of the...
it's fine.
I know.
Our structure, we generally take the piece and walk through it. And because the season is so long, I think it's perfectly reasonable to pick 2 episodes who are successive and do our normal shtick. Bring our normal schlock.
I agree.
Yeah, I'm excited. So what brought you to Doom Patrol, Lydia?
Oh, you know, I actually wrote it down. I love me some messy heroes. They don't do anything clean. They argue all the time. They are incredibly sensitive and no one can convince them to accept themselves for who they are and where they are in life. And like, I mean, obviously, like, seeing the trailer for the first time, I was like, hey, that's Brendan Fraser. I love everything that Brendan Fraser's in. I should, you know, go ahead and take a look. And then I didn't right away. And then I heard a lot of good things about it. I was like, okay, I'm going to check this out. And then as soon as I did, I was like, I'm buying the first season.
That's fantastic.
And then I was like, I'm buying the second season. It was a bit like What We Do in the Shadows, the TV series.
Okay.
I was like, oh, I'm going to check this out, see if I like it and everything. And obviously, why wouldn't I like it? But like halfway through, I was like, yep, I'm buying the second season. This is a definite yes.
Every season.
Yeah.
Anything Taika Waititi does. But I mean, for myself, like I like a lot of DC stuff. But like, I definitely love an anti-hero. And these are as close to anti-hero heroes as you can possibly get without having like a true anti-hero, like Ash from Evil Dead. So I watched it all, maybe twice.
And you watched it when I had sort of suggested it to you, right? Didn't I start playing it for you? Because you didn't even know. Like it was on HBO Max, and then we...
Yeah, it's probable.
And it didn't start out on HBO Max. It actually started out on DC's own streaming service before that sort of got acquired by HBO Max. So it and like the Harley Quinn animated cartoon and probably a few other DC things.
I mean, bless HBO. They were like, let's get a whole bunch of heroes and let them say fuck as much as they'd like.
Yep, that sounds about right. Also, like, talking about anti-heroes, this also is in the vein of like the dark DC, like the dark tone that DC was going for, but it was still like funny and enjoyable, and it wasn't like as dark and depressing as some of the other like the DCEU movies.
Well, I mean, any Batman, I mean, unless they're specifically okay, so there's two types of Batman movies. There's ones with levity, the ones I enjoy.
Right.
And then there's the dark ones where everyone's talking like this, and everything's in shadows and smoke and like alleyways and everything's wet. Like it's never dry in Gotham ever. It's like a subtropical climate full of villainy. But I as much as I appreciate that aesthetic, I don't find that kind of a sustainable, rewatchable. I'll watch it. I mean, Robert Pattinson has my money now, but like, I'm probably not going to revisit it. This I'm going to revisit because there's levity and there's humor and you get the depth of character, but like it's delicious on so many levels.
And the plot itself is one of those things where it's just so wild and crazy that the plot can be all pie in the sky, but then the character development is down to earth.
Yes.
And it's like these are things that real people in these situations would do. And so even though the plot is like, you know, the decreator and the recreator are doing a staring contest in the sky, you know, there's still like, oh, there's also, you know, one of the characters having a heart to heart with a kid who is essentially, you know, like kind of brought some evil into this world. And they didn't realize that that's what they were doing because of how they were raised.
Well, yes. A severely neglected genius child with superpowers. It's like super bummed. And so copes the best way she knows how. And then everything blows up, and that has happened to all of us.
Yeah.
With less fanfare.
Yeah.
Jen, how did you realize that you needed to make me watch this?
Oh, it wasn't my first kind of dig into the DC shows, even on HBO, but I had a really difficult time getting into like the Arrowverse. That's on.
Yeah, I watched a few episodes. I believe Madeline enjoyed it a lot, but I it was hard for me to like sign up. I think it was way too melodrama, like TV, like near daytime TV. It was early evening TV. This is late night TV.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think I actually started out with the Titans show and
the animated one?
No, the live action Titans with Robin and
I don't think I ever watched it.
I've tried to get you to watch it. It's not quirky like this show. It tends to take itself pretty seriously.
Absurdness brings me in a lot. And if it's way too much, just action, drama.
But then there was an episode of Titans that had the Doom Patrol in it. And I was like, oh, I know that there's another show based on these people. So I'll go and watch that. And it's pretty different. And Sean has some facts on why they are different. But yeah, I did. I also picked this up when it got transferred over to HBO, and I remember binging the first two seasons together and doing so in like less than a week. So it is definitely one of my favorite shows too.
I watched a lot of Teen Titans Go.
Yeah, it's almost like if you mixed Teen Titans Go with Watchmen.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow, that's a deft description, Jen. I'm going to give you air fives.
Is that Watchmen the movie or Watchmen the television show?
Well, I would say movie mostly because that's the one that both Naomi and I could link up on. I tried showing her the first, like the first episode of the Watchmen TV series, and it's really, it tackles some very, very serious issues right up front. So
life is serious enough for me most of the time. I don't need it in all of my like frivolous pursuits. You know, there's something to be said for reading a biography, but I'd rather read a sci-fi.
Right.
For real.
And for me, like the Watchmen television show is like one of my favorites. Again, another one that I saw and I was like, yep, I'm buying this. And as soon as the second season, you can't buy seasons anymore because streaming monopolies have a lockdown on that. But, you know, when it comes out, I'll be watching it.
Okay, well, maybe I'll give it another try.
All right. So for the uninitiated, Doom Patrol is a TV show based off the comic book series of the same name. Following the exploits of Cliff Steele, played by Brendan Fraser, Rita Farr, played by April Balbi, Larry Traynor, played by Matt Bomer, Jane, played by Diane Guerrero, and Vic Stone, a.k.a. Cyborg, who is played by Jovan Wade, as they search for their leader, Chief, who is played by Timothy Dalton, who resides in the clutches of the evil Mr. Nobody, who is played by Alan
Tudyk.
Yeah.
The only one whose name other than Brendan Fraser that I know.
And that's essentially season one is this found family of f-ups.
Yes.
tries to find their leader.
Yes. And we're going to get into it. But like the way that Mr. Nobody describes them. Like, by the time he speaks at the end of the first episode we talk about, I'm like, thank you. Thank you for saying exactly what I've been thinking for the past how many episodes.
Do you want to jump into some Sean facts?
I think now's a great time for Sean facts.
I'm sorry, how did you say that? Is it
Sean facts?
Nope, I said that wrong, but whatever. Sean facts.
Yeah. Yes. So the first three paragraphs of Sean's notes are highlighted, so they might be a quote like from Wikipedia or something like that, and it really is just a kind of a descriptive intro to the TV show, a little bit similar to Lydia's, but also includes a little bit of detail into the comic as well. So I'll go ahead and read this off, and I apologize to whoever the source is for not specifying who you are, but here we go. Doom Patrol first appeared in My Greatest Adventure number 80 in 1963, created by Arnold Drake, Bob Haney, and Bruno Premiani. Premiani sounds right. Dubbed the world's strangest heroes, this team consisted of misfits that faced alienation and trauma from those in the world who misunderstood them. Six issues later, DC Comics retitled the book Doom Patrol. A man in a wheelchair gathered together a group of misfit younger heroes. The world feared and hated these superpowered beings, but the man in the wheelchair was able to teach them to work as a team, save the same world that wanted nothing to do with them. And that is the story of the X-Men. It is also the story of Doom Patrol.
That's good. Good job.
Doom Patrol made their DC Comics debut in June 1963. The X-Men made their debut in Marvel Comics in September 1963. So Doom Patrol had them by just like 3 months. And the similarities are so strong that it's hard to dismiss it, even including the fact that Doom Patrol battled the Brotherhood of Evil and the X-Men took on the Brotherhood of Evil mutants. Although the Doom Patrol TV show was technically considered to be a spinoff of Titans, a lot of fans noticed inconsistencies between the series and the episode of Titans in which they were originally introduced. The discrepancies were finally clarified during the CW's Crisis on Infinite Earths crossover event. At the conclusion of the event, it was shown that the Doom Patrol series takes place on Earth 21, while Titans takes place on Earth 9. Therefore, the Doom Patrol team featured in the Titans episode is not the same team featured in the Doom Patrol series, but rather the Earth 9 version.
Yeah, that seems a little after the facty, right?
Yeah.
No, there's a reason. No, there's a reason the Death Star blows up. No, I got a movie about it. Hold on. One button. Okay.
What do they call that when you
retrofitting?
A wizard did it.
Ex machina. Deus ex machina.
Yeah. The team in the series is a mix of various lineups from the comics. Robot Man Cliff Steele is the only member who has been in the Doom Patrol in all of its comic book incarnations. Elastigirl and Crazy Jane have never been on the team at the same time. Cyborg is not tied to the comic book team in any way. His Teen Titan teammate, Beast Boy, however, is.
Yeah, we don't see him, do we?
No.
No, he is in the episode of Titans. Beast Boy comes from the Doom Patrol.
But that's Beast Boy 21.
Yeah.
Not Beast Boy's not 9.
Right.
Correct.
Okay. I'm still waiting on Beast Boy.
I do have, like, maybe a page more of notes.
Okay. I will keep it.
Not all of it has to be up front, but when we do start talking about some characters, I'll give a little tidbit of information about them. I'd also like to mention Matt Bomer and Matthew Zuck as Larry Trainer. Bomer voices the characters and appears as Larry without the bandages in early flashbacks, while Matthew Zuck physically portrays him when wrapped in bandages, wearing prosthetic makeup when not in bandages. And we have another character that is sort of the same in that there are two actors appearing as that character, depending on where they are in production.
Yeah, whether or not they've suffered their vast trauma yet.
And that's Brendan Fraser and Riley Shanahan as Cliff Steele. Sean's note here is that Fraser voices the character and appears as the human version of Cliff in flashbacks, while Riley physically portrays him as Robot Man. And both actors, Brendan Fraser and Riley Shanahan, share the same birthday, which is December 3rd.
Awesome.
And I think that's as far as I'm going to go, because I've already spoken for quite some time.
That's not a reason to stop talking. But if you'd like to, I guess it's different than when we do a movie where we'd be like, budget.
Yeah.
Monies.
Yeah.
I wonder how much an episode costs to make of this. I mean, I suppose it varies per episode, but it's got to be a few million dollars. That's how Netflix be doing. No, well, not Netflix. Mm-hmm. Sorry.
HBO Max.
That's how HBO be doing.
But like when Doom Patrol first came out, there was so much buzz about it that they renewed it for a second season. And that was, you know, the fans just constantly being like, renew Doom Patrol. And so kind of like, our flag means death, HBO Max. You should totally renew our flag means death for a second season.
Renew, 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 renew.
All right. Are we good on Sean facts, or do you want to say anything more?
No, I think we're okay. I'll raise my hand.
Okay. All right. So, again, for the uninitiated, I'm going to break down the cast and kind of get you knowing what the characters do. And, you know, if you haven't seen Doom Patrol and after this episode, you're like, I want to know what's going on with this, then you should, because they got some wild episodes.
True. The absurdity is one of my favorite things about this entire series. I, though I have very little to contribute, will rate these characters on a scale of 1 to 10 by how much I want to hang out with them.
Great.
Okay.
Because I want to hang out with all of them, but that's beside the point.
I'll let you know. Oh, and I'll tell you how I want to hang out with them.
Yeah, okay. So the first character I want to talk about is Jane. She's normally referred to on other, like Wikipedias and other people who talk about her is Crazy Jane, but I don't want to use that because she has dissociative identity disorder as a character, and that calling someone who has that crazy is ableist. And I'm only talking about it right now, but I'm not going to do it in my notes and going forward because I'm woke.
No, I think it's fair. I think that it's interesting because there's this kind of double-edged sword. Like, does she bring a highlight to the community, or does a fictional representation of the disorder like defame people who could bring better enlightenment? I don't know. But I will say, on a scale of 1 to 10. No, wait, you didn't describe her yet. Okay, sorry.
Okay, so she is played by Diane Guerrero. And Diane Guerrero, for anybody who has seen Encanto, does the voice of Isabella.
Really?
Yeah. And like the thing about Jane is that she has dissociative identity disorder. She has 64 identities, each with her own superpower. And so imagine seeing a character, you know, who has all of these different identities, but then having an actress actually try and, you know, portray all these different identities. I believe, I mean, in my opinion, she is the greatest actress I have ever seen in my entire life because she goes through these different characters so well. And of the identities that we meet in this episode, Jane, who is her primary, but we also meet Flit, who has the ability to teleport, Hammerhead, who has just super strength, and Dr. Harrison, who has the power to manipulate people with mind games.
Yeah. Yep. I would say that of my favorite actresses of all time, actors, actresses, any non-gendered specific people who portray other people, like if you can switch between characters flawlessly, I mean, it's why I love Catherine Tate. It's why I like Tracy Ullman. And it's why I like Guerrero.
Diane Guerrero.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's impeccable.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, like you see that you don't, I mean, you see it in every episode where she does bring out her other identities come out. But I think the one episode that really showcases it is the episode Danny Patrol, which is my personal favorite. And I didn't want to do it because I didn't want to find anything wrong with it. And suddenly the little, you know, bubble around me has been busted. I don't think that there is anything wrong with it. So
there's a healthy amount of self-preservation in you, and I don't disapprove.
Thank you for justifying my choices.
Just want to reinforce that I believe in you. Okay, so there are some things that I think. Now, I follow a few people with DID, and I certainly am not an expert in any way. But watching people switch from, like, say, their primary, which is the person who of their identities who presents the most, is their, like, main interaction person for most of life events. The switching between in real life can be instantaneous, like mid conversation. It can be like a nodding out sort of looking thing. Sometimes it looks a bit like a seizure. Like it presents in so many different ways. In this series, she does kind of blink, or she kind of phases. There's a little almost shimmer to her as she like blinks into another person. She can do it really quickly, and in other episodes they do show her struggling with that. And I think that's probably at least speaks a little bit more to the actual disorder. It is not the primary focus of this episode, so I think that's worth mentioning.
Right.
But on a scale of 1 to 10, on her better days, I want to hang out with Jane probably 9.5 out of 10. Agreed. It would be amazing.
Yeah.
Unless she was bickering with me, then that's the 0.5 I'm leaving out. I think I would like to like hang out with her late at night. I would walk, like take a late night. Like I don't want to walk late at night because I'm a woman. And yeah. I don't want to die. But if I was with Jane, I would be like, heck yeah, let's go for a walk. Let's go put ourselves in a beautiful place that happens to be vulnerable for me. But I know I'm safe with you.
Right.
Yeah, that would be amazing. I want to walk around with her.
It's interesting to note that her DID is trauma induced and that her primary isn't actually the initial, identity that presented itself in her life. So she had some pretty terrible things happen to her and as sort of a defensive mechanism, as described in the plot, that defense mechanism brought out the alternates.
Well, the way I've heard it described is that the majority of people I've listened to say that that DID is a trauma response. All of these personalities, facets, or whatever you want to call them, are protective layers, be it a little like a childlike persona or a protector or a persecutor is also another. Like you have to be forceful, and that's a different identity. And then you have to have a functional identity just for your day-to-day tasks. But when that person fatigues, then you rely on the others. And people claim, and I don't know, thousands of different alters, or that's what they call the different ones, alters. You can have as little as two, I suppose, up to people talk about having an entire, I mean, they call themselves systems, like solar systems worth of like different presentations. It's fascinating. It's complicated. Obviously, I don't know enough, but I find her probably the most complicated character because of that.
Right. And Oliver Alter's, you know, they are in what she calls the underground when they're not on the surface. So that's important because it comes up later. All right. So the next character is Rita Farr. She is a 1920s starlet whose age has stopped her from getting work because Hollywood is awful.
Mm-hmm.
And she was like the first time I saw this, I could have sworn it was like a curse, like a magic kind of thing. But it wasn't. It was just like this. She is exposed to gas that on the set of a movie that ended up giving her giving her body the ability to kind of like stretch itself. But because she can't control it, like it manifests as just like, you know, like skin that just kind of like slinks down. And like you see like periodically her like half of her face will just sort of like melt. Mm-hmm. It looks like it's melting.
It's awesome. When she gets all bloated, you get all discolored. She looks like a dying corpse in some parts. And that's pretty fascinating.
Yeah. And there's a lot of times where she can almost like it happens more on her right side. Maybe that's her dominant side. But we just see it like it mostly just kind of happens on the right side of her body when it starts to happen.
Yeah. And she can completely like near liquefy.
Mm-hmm.
Like she's just a puddle of flesh.
Yeah.
So it must affect her bones as well.
Right. The episode before this one that we're going to be going over, she actually does like turn into liquid and hide inside of her buddy Cliff Steele. And then she like comes out as they're doing like this stealth mission to get to get someone back.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
But she can also, when she's in control of her powers, stretch and grow and do like really, really crazy strong things, right?
Yeah. She can stretch out her body. She can, you know, just be very elastic. She's her like hero name is Elasta Woman, which always reminds me of Elastigirl from The Incredibles.
I mean, not dissimilar, except I think she can grow really big. I don't think.
Yeah. There is a Sean fact on that. At the end of The Incredibles, the name Elastic Girl is credited to DC Comics. They didn't own the rights to that name, but they actually had to acquire it or rent it for the Incredibles movie.
Good. Get your money. All
yeah.
Right. She is obsessed with fame, feels nothing warmer than the spotlight, right?
Mm-hmm.
And she always speaks with a certain candor, right?
Right. She's a 1920s actress, and so she has to talk in a very specific way.
Right. And that breaks down sometimes, and I think that's when she's most relatable. However, on my patented scale of 1 to 10, she is a 7 out of 10.
Yeah.
Because she is not a sloppy drunk, and I want to hang out with her in a bar while she talks down to very well-classed men.
She gives some really good insults. She's also kind of like the person who tells it like it is in the first episode when she's meeting Cliff Steele. She's the one who's like, the chief isn't going to go ahead and show this to you, but I believe in ripping off the Band-Aid. And then she like shows Cliff what he's become after, and we'll get to it.
She's conditioned to be a leader. That's like the bent of her entire arc, is that she's built up to be. But when you first meet her, you're like, you're not leading. I mean, you couldn't lead water downhill in a rainstorm, like, you honey.
Yeah.
Right? But she has this, I mean, admittedly fantastic arc.
Right. And like you see little bits of it in her character leading up to this moment where she's like, she's really good at helping people through their problems, even if she's a bit of a, you know, iron. Like, even if she's a bit forceful when she does it. That being said, when talking about her own things, she's not very, like, she doesn't like to be very...
She's like old Ironsides.
Well, she have you ever seen that meme where it's like, you know, me handling other people's problems and they're like very, you know, like, I know exactly what needs to be done. And then when dealing with their own problems, they're like, you know, puddle, which is very...
relatable, yeah.
Especially with Rita, because she can turn into an actual puddle.
Yeah. True story. Okay, who's next?
So the next is Larry Trainer, played by Matt Bomer and Matthew Zuck. Larry is a 1960s Air Force pilot who flew into a space anomaly that radiated him and gave him a new friend known as the Negative Spirit. Larry's big thing is that when you look at Matt Bomer, the first thing I saw when I saw him is, oh, Superman, because he looks like
the all-American blue-eyed, blonde-haired, chiseled jaw. He
doesn't have blonde hair, but yeah, essentially.
What color is his hair?
It's like a brown black.
Oh.
Yeah, it's brown.
I just found out that I have brown hair now. Oh. I haven't adjusted to it yet. Sorry.
You'll get used to it. But Larry Trainor's whole like life was this idyllic. He had a wife and two kids, and he, you know, was part of the American Air Force. And but he had a secret, which was that he was a closeted gay man who was having an affair with like his what was it? Was it?
It's a coworker.
As a coworker,
I can't remember if he's his co-pilot or like an engineer. Or something
he's like
that.
Yeah, he's like the guy who helps him out with all of his stuff for the airplanes and everything. And you know, it's something that you know Larry was not willing to let go of the expectation of. I believe the term is compulsory heterosexuality, mm-hmm. even though he knew he was gay. And so, like at this very important moment. He gets, you know, irradiated, and he's essentially like separated from society because his radiation literally kills people if they're too close to him.
Right. So they lock him up in whatever detention center it's called.
Yeah, we get to it later, but it's called the Ant Farm.
And he's endowed with the negative spirit.
Yeah.
There's a little note here, too, from Sean that the look of negative man's disguise is inspired by the classic Universal classic monsters character Invisible Man, and the look is likely meant as an homage as well as a parallel with how society views these heroes as monsters.
I like that. I would like to note that he is not a pervert and the Invisible Man is a pervert.
Yeah.
If you look at it from a certain perspective, it's almost like we do have the Invisible Man and Frankenstein and the Blob.
A Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde.
Yeah. So a lot of these do have sort of callbacks to Universal's monsters.
I like that. I mean, I like monsters.
Yeah. Also, Larry Trainor has the best outfit. I mean, it's not just the bandages. He also has these like, you know, goggles, mm-hmm. like wielding, like engineering goggles. Mm-hmm. He also wears like this long bomber jacket. And it's got the fur around the collar and everything. Yeah. And he's got fingerless gloves. And
it
it's
must
just
be so hot in that thing.
I know.
Cool. That's the coolest looking, I think, in terms of like full coverage costumes. Okay. So patented scale. Oh, wait. You want to talk about his powers?
Well, I mean, his power is pretty much he can the negative spirit comes out. He's referred to as negative man. And he can like, I mean, there's just a lot of like control of force fields and energy. I mean, we find out at the very last episode that he can like literally rip holes in dimensions. So,
yeah. He might like bulbs explode. That happens all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So scale of 1 to 10.
Right.
I kind of want to hang out with him. Okay, when he's in his, and most of the time when we see him, I want to hang out with him 5 out of 10. But when he's on the Danny the Street episode, which we're not going to discuss, but the Danny the Street episode, when he's like, for the briefest moment, he's out and happy and singing. And I don't want to make him like the stereotypical singing, happy, dancing gay man. But like when people are full of joy and they're experiencing their true selves and they're like really reaching, I find that super desirable. I downloaded that Kelly Clarkson song and I know it by heart. So
same.
Everybody goes through it. Okay. So anyways, okay. But that is like a 10 out of 10 for me. So because I have to come between the two, I'm going to call it a 7.5. I'm glad that he eventually gets to the point where he's like comfortable coming out. And I, for anyone who happens to be queer questioning in here, come out when you're comfortable and you feel safe. Also, if I get to be around that, I'm so happy for you. You know, I get like super excited when people like have revelatory moments. So good for him.
Yeah.
Good for us.
Yeah.
7.5.
Yeah. All right.
Who's next on the chopping block?
Oh, that would be Cliff Steele, a.k.a. Robot Man, played by Brendan Fraser and Riley Shanahan. And as Jen said, Matthew Zuck and Riley Shanahan are the body doubles for both Larry Trainor and Cliff Steele. Also, Cliff Steele, Robot Man. It's just always kind of funny.
It's like his jaw was named after his original name, and then like he became a robot. He's basically a brain in a metal body, right?
Yeah. He's a 1980s race car driver who crashed with his wife and daughter and injured himself to the point of being a brain in a can.
In 1963, Robot Man's original name when they created the comic was Automaton.
Well, that's just dumb. It's fine. It's fine. Robot Man is rolls off the tongue a little bit better, considering, like, there's nothing atomic about him, really.
Well, automaton just means, like, automatic responsiveness.
Yeah, but so are the robots at Disneyland, but they don't have, like, sentience.
Yes.
So, Robot Man.
Yeah.
Really fits the description better.
Like Negative Man. Because Negative Man is man and the negative spirit
yeah.
together.
Yeah.
I get you.
Elastic Girl. They didn't get really great with these names.
They don't have to be because they did good on the character development.
Yeah, true.
Right. And Cliff's whole thing is he's very blunt in the way that Rita is blunt, but he's not nice. Like, when Rita's blunt, she's at least trying to be nice.
Or move the whatever forward.
Right. And Cliff is just, like, nothing but reaction.
Everything's a nail when you're a hammer.
Right. But not everything is actually a nail in Cliff's life.
Yeah, which is why he's so screwed. Boom! Wordplay!
Also, like, hammer, screw, he's a robot.
Just so, are you drilling that into our audience? You gotta wrench it in there.
Keep going.
I just want to bring it onto the level. I saw what you did there.
Gotta keep this engine moving forward.
Are you liable to combust?
I'm really tired of this now. Tires.
You're really getting exhausted. Divisive sip on your coffee is pretty good. Dumb. I'm sweating. Okay.
Jen, do you need? Did you take that coffee because you need more fuel to get through the rest of this?
Da-da-da-da-da.
Yeah, there isn't much else to say about Cliff Steele
except he can't feel anything.
Right,
that's important to know. He can move his body. He can lift and move things, and he can move himself around with his legs and stuff, but he doesn't have the senses, any of the five senses other than movement, if that's a sense, and vision, and the ability to speak. But he doesn't have, like, the ability to smell or to... He can hear, I guess.
But he can't, like, feel things.
Like, the things that really make life, and I hate this word, but I'm gonna use this word, the things that make life unctuous.
Okay.
The things that he took... I think it's worth noting the things that he took advantage of in his life, because he was a scumbag in his less robot life. He would, like, you know, eat, drink. He would do all of these things, like, just being a total hedonist. But then he loses all of that. And then what do you do when whatever it was you were, like, using to deaden or deafen what was overwhelming you? When all of that is taken away, now he has to deal with it. And I think that's his overall arc, is that he has to now be present because he can't be drunk anymore. And he has to be emotionally vulnerable because he can no longer be physically vulnerable, if that's what you can call sex sometimes, you know, right. Like with another person. It's just, it's interesting, but also, and I love Brendan Fraser, and the show would not be great without him on my patented scale of 1 to 10. 2.5. I don't want to hang out with him.
Yeah, Cliff is not the kind of person that you would hang out with. But if I needed something lifted heavily, if I needed something heavy lifted, I would be like, hey, Cliff, can you help me with this?
I've been to a couple demolition derbies. I would go to one of those with him.
Yeah.
But how often do I do that? So he goes down the scale. It's not like I want to, like, I mean, I like engaged conversation and, like, and appreciating the nuance. Like, because it's there to be f***ed is his, like, whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't reciprocate that. So we probably wouldn't be bestest buddies.
Right.
But he wouldn't be uninvited to the party.
Mm-hmm. Next is Victor Stone, a.k.a. Cyborg, who is played by Jovan Wade. And he caused an explosion that killed his mom. And his dad was forced to turn him into, you know, a half man, half cyborg. But is that what actually happened? Maybe there's something else that's going on.
Stay tuned for part 37 of this podcast episode. Right now in the series, he's my least favorite character to follow. Wait till we get to him in my notes. You will be disappointed. I want to hang out and play his video games. I bet his, like, remixes and the music, because I watched Teen Titans Go. So, like, in my mind, he's, like, this awesome DJ guy. But in the majority of the series, I'd be like, oh, hi, Cyborg. And then I'd walk past him down the hall to go hang out with somebody else. That's a 1 out of 10.
I mean, I didn't feel that way with Victor. Like I said, I want to kind of hang out with everybody.
Uh-huh.
And so when it comes to Victor, he's the only actual superhero in this group. That's something that they say in the episodes we're going to be going over. But these are not like traditional superheroes. There's a lot of times where they just don't want to, you know, do anything. And Victor is actually a hero. He's like, no, we got to make sure that people are taken care of. An entire town got sucked up into a donkey's. We got to go into that donkey and figure it out. I think there is a lot of like tension between him and the other characters. In the second episode, we see Victor. The first time Victor interacts with anybody in the group, it's Cliff, and they have an argument. And then in the third episode, Victor is like trying to be the leader of this group, but he is like, you know, he can't really do all the things that the leader does because he's kind of being pigeonholed by his dad. And he's still like young though. He is the youngest out of all of them. And he's the one who has the most experience being a hero.
Yeah. But that doesn't necessarily make you leadership material.
Right. Not by default. Mm-hmm. I mean, he would definitely need a lot more experience to actually, you know, call himself a leader. Another, a few other honorable mentions that I wanted to kind of bring up are Timothy Dalton plays Chief. That is their MacGuffin. I named him MacGuffin McNasty because they tried going after him for the entirety of the season. And the Chief is like the guy who kind of brings them all together.
MacGuffin
and
McDaddy.
Oh, that's better. Yeah.
You can have it.
Yeah.
It's for you.
So the next character is Mr. Nobody, a.k.a. Eric Morden, played by Alan Tudyk.
Alan Tudyk.
Yeah.
He's rising high as the stars in my brain go. Like, he's getting up there. Resident Alien. Mwah, chef's kiss.
Yeah.
Him in
Firefly.
Okay, yes, Firefly. But I'm less Firefly. I am more Dirk Gently's Holistic Detective Agency. And he's like the best.
Second season.
Alan Tudyk, he could narrate my life if he wanted to.
Yeah, and he narrates everybody in this show. He's the villain, and he has the ability to, you know, like, he essentially kidnapped the Chief and took him into his like into this like void, so to speak. If you ever caught the last season of Last Week Tonight with John Oliver, it was essentially just a white space that he took him to.
The empty void.
Yeah.
Voiced by John H. Benjamin.
Oh yeah, the guy from Bob's Burgers.
Yeah, he could also narrate my life, but he'd have to do it lower, slower, and next to my neck.
He can insult me any day of the week, and I would be like, yeah, okay, I'll take that.
Mr. Nobody's specific power is the power to narrate. When he says something, it has to be done, and he has this fourth wall break like Deadpool would. Mm-hmm. And the ability to kind of bring the audience into it as well.
Yeah, but it gives them this kind of omniscience, omnipotence, really. I don't think he has, so God is defined as omniscient, omnipresent, omnipotent, right? He knows all, he can be everywhere, he can do anything. I think he can't be God, but he thinks he is, which is interesting. But which of those things does he not have? So maybe he's not omnipresent? But he knows everything that's going on.
He knows everything that's going on. He can kind of see what everybody is doing.
So
kind of like
omniscient.
Yeah, definitely omniscient, omnipresent. But I wouldn't say that he can control everybody. He's just like, because later on, we'll get to it later on about why I don't think so. But I don't think he can manipulate physical things. Like in the episode Therapy Patrol, you see this rat's mom get killed by the Doom Patrol bus, you know, running over her, and then the rat gets manipulated by Mr. Nobody to wreak havoc. But I mean, that's the kind of manipulation that I think he can do. It's just verbal, kind of like,
yeah. So he narrates it into existence, but he can't like just say something and boom, it happens.
Right.
He can't be like, you're a potato, and then you're a potato.
Right.
Okay.
I mean, if he can do that, we don't see it anywhere in the show.
Well, he can do it a bit in the void, but apparently the void is different than the world.
Mm-hmm.
So that's cool.
Right.
We'll get there.
Right. And it seems like the void is like his own personal domain.
10 out of 10 would hang out with him. No doubt. Any situation.
I don't know. Like, I think personally, I would be a little bit less likely to, you know, want to hang out with Mr. Nobody. Eric Morden, I would probably want to hang out with because he's a clumsy oaf, you know, before he gets his superpowers. And I think that it would be like charming to see all of the things that he thinks is going to take over the world and be like, oh, that's so cute. And oh, you're adorable in a very condescending way, by the way.
Well, I'm thinking specifically Mr. Nobody. I'd probably loathe to hang out with Eric.
I just wouldn't want someone to be able to, you know, narrate my life. I'm like, no, I can narrate my life pretty well. Narrate your own life, Mr. Nobody. All right. And the next person that I wanted to bring up is Flex Mentallo.
This guy.
He is played by Devon Chandler Long. And he's just like this beefy guy who has like these leopard print shorts. And he can, his superpower is he can flex his muscles and he can make things happen. Like,
fantastic things can happen.
Yeah, like lowering a tree branch, maybe making food appear.
Yeah, he made a flower appear by doing a little flexity flex.
Yeah, with his butt.
It's so cute. It is. But his biggest flex
is his smile.
His best flex, I meant. But yeah. Yes, yeah. His smile.
Yeah.
I have some notes from Sean on Flex. He's partially based on Charles Atlas. That makes sense. Charles Atlas, whose real name was Angelo Siciliano, was a professional bodybuilder and industry pioneer. Atlas had a few famous advertising campaigns back in the day. Mr. Atlas was an incredibly friendly man and a real-life hero in his own right. In the comic, Flex Mentallo is one of the few heroes with comic book awareness. In layman's terms, he, Flex, knows that he's a comic book character. However, he doesn't make a habit of breaking the fourth wall like Alan Tudyk, and or She-Hulk and Deadpool. I also found out a little bit more about Flex in the comics, and he at one point does have an encounter with Dr. Manhattan from the Watchmen. So
the
he's,
guy with like the guy who can diddle his wife in the other room while he's still working on his experiments.
Yeah, there's something weird.
Yes, if you can do that, do that. I don't care.
There's something weird going on in Mars, and it turns out to be Dr. Manhattan, and Flex is sent with a group of others to figure out what's going on Mars. Oh, he's also, he originally was a comic inside of the comic.
Mm-hmm.
So he was brought to life from a comic book, and his in the comic of the comic, he got his superpowers through somebody threw sand in his face on a beach when he was a kid, and he decided he wanted to be strong enough to never have that happen again. So he found a book and read it and learned all these secrets about how to flex to cause universal changes to happen.
Yeah, he can change physical properties just by flexing his muscles.
Did we talk enough about Chief?
No, not really. You don't really see a lot of the Chief in the first season. I think you do get glimpses of
like flashbacks and stuff.
Flashbacks, but most of what we hear about him is the fact that he's just like a really good guy, and everybody in the Doom Patrol really likes him. And even though they start kind of seeing things that might look a little bit like in one episode, they see like the original Doom Patrol. Like they're older and they're not really in control of their powers anymore. They're like in an old folks home. But the Chief had to put them there. And like the episode kind of ends on a bittersweet moment where you're like, oh, wow, he's just kind of like he abandoned the original Doom Patrol for like a newer set, so to speak. And so it's a little bit bittersweet on that end. We're not going to be really talking much about the Chief. He's in these couple of episodes that we're going to be going over. He's essentially just kind of a MacGuffin, and then there's everything. And then we do interact with him at the very end of the second episode.
Special Jen fact, Matt Bomer and Timothy Dalton have appeared in the TV series Chuck.
Nice.
Okay, Chief, 6 out of 10.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to sit and study with him and watch him drink dark liquor and smoke a cigar, and I will read a very vintage-smelling book and watch the fire crackle.
Right.
In our high-backed leather chairs. Flex Mentallo, it depends on my mood, but he seems pretty decent. I would probably like 8 out of 10.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he seems like he's positive. He's a little woke.
Mm-hmm.
He's never rude. Not really.
Yeah.
So, like, yeah. Once his hair is cut and his beard is gone. But right. That's later on in the episode.
Right.
He's also the actor plays the Norseman in the U.S. version of Ghosts.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. Nice.
Who's also a surprisingly woke, yeah. Very hot guy.
All right. Na 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 na.
You've now reached the end of our introduction to Doom Patrol on HBO Max, a plotter. Next week, we'll give you the full plot walkthrough of our first of two episode selections from Lydia, Flex Patrol. We're excited to be bringing you our very first non-theatrical discussion this month, and can't wait to fill you in on some of our favorite moments from this quirky DC comic book adaptation. Interested in some other great discussions on pop culture and media? Ten-ish Podcast is an edutainment podcast covering top 10 lists with fun facts, trivia, and hot takes. And I Have Some Notes endeavors to fix Hollywood's most mediocre movies. Check out links to these great shows in this week's description. Hey, this is your audio engineer and someone who uses the multiverse to get the best discounts when shopping, Jen. Did you know you can absolutely change the fabric of our reality? How? By leaving us a review, of course. Rate us or leave a note about what you're enjoying most about our peculiar podcasts using Apple Podcasts, Podchaser.com, or our website at shockedinaplot.com. We'll be back next week to finally dive into the plot of Season 1, Episode 13 of Doom Patrol, titled Flex Patrol, next week. From Shocked and Applaud, thank you for patroning the peculiar.